Justified, the Freedom Convoy, the Emergencies Act, and the inquiry that got it wrong. Welcome back to the program, Ray.
Thank you. Good to be speaking with you, Chris.
Well, it's always great to speak with you. It's been, I don't know, 7 or 8 months, I think, since we last talked on Valentine's Day last. And the Valentine's Day here in Canada should be remembered for something other than hearts and chocolate boxes. Ray, before it gets all swept down the memory hole, though, take us back to St. Valentine's Day 2022 and how that should be for Canadians, a date that lives in infamy.
That was the date where earlier in the day by noon on the 14th of February, a city of Ottawa and lead protesters of the Freedom Convoy had already agreed to remove 75% of the vehicles in Ottawa and had made good on removing about 102 trucks from the city by 12 noon that day. But notwithstanding, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau invoked the Emergencies Act for the first time in its new iteration, replacing the War Measures Act that his father had used in 1970 in the FLQ crisis, because the government judged that there was a national emergency and a threat to the nation's security and the government itself.
The FLQ crisis that Father Pierre Trudeau had invoked the War Measures Act, famously saying, "Just watch me," when asked if he would actually bring the army into the streets. In subsequent years, the legitimacy of that action has been called into question, too. But in that case, at least you can say that there was some mailboxes blown up, there was people kidnapped, there was people murdered. But what happened when his son was in power, that's a long way from explosions and bodies in car trunks.
And especially given what was happening from the police intelligence side of operations monitoring with undercover police, as well as plainclothes police in and amongst the crowd every day. You have people like the Ontario Provincial Police that issued an intelligent report on the morning of the 14th, saying the mood today was again calm, festive, and family-oriented. Speakers were again telling people to walk away from agitators and thank the police for remaining calm. Many of the speakers were promoting love and peaceful protest, some taking quotes from the Bible. Speakers were also wishing everyone a happy Valentine's, and a memo noted that there were children on Wellington Street playing hockey, as well as hundreds of roses being given to police officers. And that was intelligence report hours before the Prime Minister invoked the Emergencies Act.
Well, now that's the scene in Ottawa itself, but the invocation, as I remember it, and this is going back 30 some odd months now, was to do with the border and the blockades at the border. What's the relationship? And correct me, Ray, if my memory, I'm getting on here, my memory is a little foggy, but what was the justification at the time? Was it the situation in Ottawa or the border or both? This the justification, use scare quotes there, but for invoking this unprecedented piece of legislation.
The situation in Ottawa was being described by senior government cabinet ministers as, like, you know, there were people warning about the protesters using children as human shields, that there may be weapons, ammunition, guns in the trucks on Wellington Street, that the border at Windsor, Detroit, the bridge there was, unmanageable, even though it was open to traffic by the end of the evening of the day before, on the 13th. There were serious accusations regarding four men on the Coots border blockade across from Sweetgrass, Montana, that four men were involved in possibly a plot to a conspiracy to commit murder of RCMP officers. None of them were found guilty of that serious charge. But at the time, that was also one of a handful of things. Plus, also you have numbers of ministers, Marco Mendocino, Deputy Minister Chrystia Freeland, saying, "Well, we have to invoke the Emergencies Act because of the damage to the economy, and we think there's going to be more protests at border points. It's like whack-a-mole. So we just got to do this now. We've got to freeze bank accounts and so on." So off they went.
Because this invocation in law also necessitates there be an investigation after the fact, there was one impaneled where there's actually two, if I remember rightly now. Tell me about the POEC, but maybe first Justice Richard Mosley.
Okay, so we have the impaneling of the Public Order Emergency Commission, which is required in the legislation, the Emergencies Act that was passed in 1988 under the Mulroney government, which says that within 60 days of the end of an emergency, that someone must be appointed to head up a Public Order Emergency Commission, which will then report to Parliament within a year of the end of the emergency. So that happened. And then as well, there was a class action lawsuit which went before a federal court judge. So you have the inquiry, which is mandated by Parliament, which is not a court of law. And then you have Justice Richard Mosley, who is ruling on a class action lawsuit regarding the justification of the legality or unconstitutional or constitutional action of the government. And that judgment was rendered on the 23rd of January 2024. So the Rouleau report of the Public Order Emergency Commission came out in mid-February of 2023, and then Justice Mosley's report rendering the government's action as unconstitutional came out in January of 2024. Which has also led to more now people who are the several hundreds of people whose bank accounts were frozen are now involved in civil action against naming people in the government for damages.
Now, there's some distance between these two judicial proceedings in their findings. Do you want to explain a little bit how what Mosley found and what the POEC determined was the upshot of this enactment of the Public Emergencies Act.
Yeah, so with the decision by Mosley, he's deciding whether or not, what happened in terms of Canadian citizens' charter rights under the Constitution of the Act of 1982 and the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And his judgment was that the invocation was not justified. The decision to issue a proclamation, he says, does not bear the hallmarks of reasonableness, justification, transparency, and intelligibility in relation to the relevant factual and legal constraints that were taken into consideration. There can be only one reasonable interpretation of the Emergencies Act, Sections 3 and 17 of the CESIS Act, and the applicants have established that the legal constraints on the discretion of the governor and council, or governor and cabinet, declare a public emergency were not satisfied. And so we have a decision by the judge in a federal court of law that it was important for him to hear the court. He said, if the court declines to hear these cases, a precedent may be established that so long as the government can revoke the declaration of emergency before a judicial review application can be heard, the courts will have no role in reviewing the legality of such a decision, because the government was saying, well, since we ended the national emergency on the 23rd of February 2022, it's over. So now there doesn't need to be anybody to review whether that was a good idea or not. And thankfully, the Justice Mosley went to the pointed out that actually the government can't shield itself from any judicial scrutiny of its actions by simply saying, oh, well, that's over now.
because we still have the same government that enacted this is in power today. They've got a bit invested, especially as an election approaches within the next half year or so anyway, perhaps. They're not really anxious to dig old wounds, and they would be happy just to shove this all under the carpet. But as we talked the last time, Ray, about this idea, and you've mentioned it a couple times here, the seizure of bank accounts is a new wrinkle, at least as far as I'm aware, in Canadian jurisprudence. Can you explain, especially to our audiences outside the country, what happened and where that stands right now? Are these people reimbursed? Is the legislation that they can freeze a bank account at will still in place and so on? But maybe just describe what happened and what the situation is today.
So once the Emergencies Act was invoked on the 14th of February, by the 15th of February, the government, through the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, who's also the deputy minister, announced that they would be freezing bank accounts. What happened was police sort of wandered around downtown Ottawa primarily and took down license plates of vehicles, cars and trucks and pickups, and just... There was from what Justice Mosley discovered, there was completely ad hoc decision making being done regarding who maybe should have their bank accounts frozen. And so a bunch of license plates are collected, the identities of the drivers of the owners of the vehicles, even if somebody perhaps had driven a vehicle to Ottawa and it actually belonged to someone else in the family, but never mind. So you even have people who ended up having the bank accounts frozen who were never even in Ottawa at all.
But it's important, though, that to stress that being at what this these demonstrations isn't illegal.
No, it's not illegal, and there was what also was found that there. I mean, there was not a single window broken in any business or home. There was not a single punch made. Nobody was arrested for physical violence. And so, yes, this was a peaceful protest. And the Canadian tradition has always been, going back to the start of our Confederation, 1867, whenever protesters have appeared, protesters from Regina going to Ottawa in 1935, R.B. Bennett, Prime Minister, sat down with eight protesters to discuss disagreements about government policy and the economy. And it's always been the case that you know, not necessarily a prime minister, but often deputy ministers or somebody representing the government will sit down with the protesters. And sometimes protesters that are protesting whatever happens to be going on may get some concessions or a promise by the government to consider something, or sometimes they may walk away with nothing, but at least there's a discussion. Because there's always been a tradition in our Canadian democracy to seek to find a middle ground if you can talk to people. I mean, if you can't talk to people and they refuse to talk to you, that's something else. But in the case of the protests in Ottawa, our Prime Minister Justin Trudeau refused from the get-go to have any conversation with what he called an unacceptable fringe minority.
Yeah, the deplorables, as it was called by somebody else. But it wasn't just the people in attendance, or at least the people who had cars in attendance that had bank accounts seized, but also people that donated. And you write in the introduction to your book, and again, it's unjustified, the Freedom Convoy, the Emergencies Act, and the inquiry that got it wrong, that others that had donated, and they had raised more than $20 million in fast time, and mostly in small donations from Canadians across the country that were watching these convoys pass from Alberta on the way to Ottawa, from Halifax, from coast to coast to coast, as we like to hear on the CBC. People were sending in their donations, and some of them, too, all of a sudden found that they couldn't get into their bank accounts.
That's true. And you've also had people who were ex-spouses who you know, maybe there's a continuing agreement between the ex-parent, you know, the parents who are divorced to carry on with certain financial arrangements because they're involved in custody. Maybe the children are in the home of the father 1 week and the mother the next, or whatever the case may be. And suddenly, somebody who was at the convoy, because their bank accounts were frozen, now also the bank accounts of their former spouse were frozen. Okay. So there's all kinds of things that rippled out, and the Public Order Emergency Commission, in it, Justice Muse, no, Justice Rouleau, muses, well, things like this can happen, and really we couldn't have helped it, and it was actually a really great, kind of a great thing. We were very successful thing to sort of scare the pants off of Canadians from coast to coast. And initially it seemed that there was just statements made to the press during the Emergencies Act, the life of it, that they would make the freezing bank accounts permanent. They didn't go ahead with that permanently. And partly that's because there was incredible pushback. There were people on Wall Street, and I don't know the actual names, but I understand that Keith Wilson, who's one of the lawyers for some of the participants in the Freedom Convoy, was apprised of this, that there were people on Wall Street that made phone calls to at least the Prime Minister's office, and they said, "What's going on in Canada? We thought that this was a country where you can do your banking without any kind of worries. Is this becoming a banana republic? You have 24 hours to turn this around, or we're going to make some very public statements in opposition to what you've done." And then suddenly it was like, "Well, I guess we don't have to do this anymore, and we're going to stop doing this." So, but in the report of the Public Order Emergency Commission report, Rouleau goes on and talks about, well, we can start freezing. You could have, would have been okay if they'd frozen assets, people's boats, businesses,
Well, they're trucks.
homes. So, not just the, I mean, not as they were seizing trucks, but not just that, vacation properties, whatever. And it's so ironic because here we have we're living in a country where just, was it 30 years ago or so, we had a prime minister, I think it was Mulroney, but who was apologizing to Japanese Canadians for the government in World War II seizing properties and sending them off to internment camps. And so it seems like we have this real disconnect, not remembering what government overreach in the past has resulted in after a lot of hand-wringing and apologies over those kind of things, and yet we're doing something that's moving in that direction. So it's very concerning.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ray McGinnis. Ray is an author and retired educator. He was concerned about the unprecedented invocation of the Emergencies Act in 2022, like a lot of us were, and he attended, like most of us didn't, the Public Order Emergency Commission hearings that followed. He was one of the only journalists in Canada following the subsequent Coutts 4 case, which you mentioned, Ray, and he published on that here in Canada and on international sites as well. His book titles include Writing the Sacred, A Psalm-Inspired Path to Appreciating and Writing Sacred Poetry, Unanswered Questions, What the September 11th Families Asked and the 9/11 Commission Ignored, and we're talking about his recently released Unjustified, The Freedom Convoy, The Emergencies Act, and The Inquiry That Got It Wrong. What kind of reception is the book getting, Ray? Have you had Has it been out long enough for you to gauge the Canadian public's taste, and maybe beyond Canada too, for what it is you have to say, and digging up unhappy memories?
Well, I can only gauge a little bit by looking from day to day since it came out on the 17th September. I think this with you, this is I think the maybe sixth or seventh interview I've had now, and I've got more coming up. And the book is, at least in Canada, Amazon, which sells certainly over half the stock of book titles these days, has had my book listed under the History of Canada book category as selling as high as eighth biggest seller on a given day. That's in just that one category. But I think it's getting attention, and so I think it's just going to be a lot of, I think that the book is really solid. I think people like that I've got nearly 400 footnotes So it's, I've got the receipts for what I'm talking about. So I think it's going to be a book that people will read and then mention to other people. And so I think it's on a roll.
Well, I haven't read the whole thing yet. I've just started the beginning, and I read Rodney Palmer's a terrific foreword, and he describes the book as relating the experience of the truckers coming to our rescue. He says that the heart and soul of our country was coming to our rescue in this milieu of the lockdown, which might, have faded from people's memory now, even 2.5 and some odd years later. But the truckers' reaction came after this restrictions for general mobility, the restrictions on free movement for Canadians was coming in, and this was unprecedented too. And the fact that the truckers were now going to be restricted crossing the border and so forth, and how this was going to affect not only them but the economy of the country. These were measures that weren't being taken in other jurisdictions. It seemed that the Canadian government here was getting maybe a little overly gung-ho about this.
And it's so odd because in our Charter of Rights and Freedoms we have we're granted the freedom of mobility and the right to earn a livelihood, and you have 32,000 truck drivers that are suddenly sidelined from being able to work because they're required to enter the Canadian border and show their vaccination status. And if they're not vaccinated, then they have to go into a quarantine for, I don't know, 10 or 14 days. But whether it's 10 or 14, that means that the best you could do optimally as a truck driver under those conditions is have a load, go across the states, come back, get quarantined for 10 or 14 days, and maybe you'll get to work 2 or 3 days a month. And most people should understand that working 2 or 3 days a month isn't going to cover your bills. So they're really, the government was really being punitive. And also at a time, and I didn't look at this at the time, but even Health Canada in its website, if you go down the labyrinth and find it, they already were reporting officially that several hundred people in Canada had received the vaccine, had died as a consequence. Not something that the CBC or CTV or Global News seems to be interested in reporting, but it was clear that for some people at least, taking the vaccine was deadly. And so the number of official people who've died from getting this vaccine are 488 as of early January this year. And so, and then the Center for Disease Control in the States was reporting that in the summer of August 2021, Rochelle Walensky told Wolf Blitzer on CNN that the vaccine didn't prevent infection and didn't prevent transmission, which is why you ended up having a Center for Disease Control conference of their own employees, I think down in Atlanta in 2021 or 2022, and they had a huge COVID outbreak, even though they were all vaccinated. So people were asking why push to have a vaccine to say it's the way out when it doesn't prevent transmission and doesn't prevent infection and also has serious consequences for some people that take it.
Well, the propaganda and messaging around this whole thing is another huge issue. Not only that the Canadian government traduced the law in the way that it did and endangered us all for the future, but the way the media jumped right on board. The CBC, of course, is a government organ, but the other it seemed a unanimous pile-on by media. What I found interesting, again from the foreword from Rodney Palmer, a former reporter who had worked at the CBC, at the CTV, at the newspapers in this country of note, he calls this the nation's largest labor protest in history. And what was revealed pretty quickly was the low regard in which the elite in the media and in the government hold the working people of this country. It wasn't just truckers, as you described, that was out. It was nurses, it was firemen, it was police, across section of the whole working class, the ones that were suffering most from this, from the restrictions, they weren't working from home on their computer laptops or whatever. They had to go to work and they couldn't do that. What does it say to you, Ray, about the way the country, the divisiveness that was sown in and around this whole issue?
It says to me that that propaganda is very effective, that we have become a society where we trust that we can sit in our living room couches and watch the nightly news, assume that the news that we're following would never cherry pick or tell us half-truths or fabricate out of whole cloth a depiction of those who would protest individuals or groups a government policy of the moment. And I think that what we need to learn to do again is to hear from firsthand reports. I mean, the citizens in Ottawa that bothered to go into the crowds were overwhelmingly satisfied that the protest was not the threat that was being described. There was an Afro-Canadian gentleman who I heard speak about his mother, who was watching, I think, the CTV news, and she was very anxious for him. He was involved with a fitness club downtown Ottawa. And he said, "No, Mom, it's okay. Let's go down. And if you feel the least bit anxious, we'll leave immediately." So they went down a couple hours. And then he says, "What do you think?" And she said, "I can't believe what they're saying on the news. These people are so friendly."
Yeah, and this is important, because what they were saying on the news and what the government was saying was that these people were right-wing loonies, they were racists, they were violent, they were all these other things. I spoke with Dimitri Lascaris, who went and spent 24 hours in Ottawa at the encampment too, and he said everything that he had been told by the media was wrong, every single thing. But these kind of notions still persist. I'm looking at an email or a tweet, and there was a flag burning, and there were some right-wing people in Canada that were upset that war protesters burned a Canadian flag. He says, and I'll quote him, he says, "Oh, so to be clear, for the right, burning a flag is an illegitimate form of protest, but occupying a city for weeks, erecting a shanty town, and shitting everywhere is cool."
Yeah.
And so this is the perception, even 2.5 years later, after these court hearings, and there's loads of documentary evidence to disprove what this person is saying. But this is kind of a thumbnail go-to historical reference of what the convoy did and what it was about.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. So we have from other nations, the events of Tiananmen Square in Beijing and the state media in China was describing it not, they were, you know, not students as they correctly were students who wanted, you know, liberalization of the country. But in the media in China, TV, radio, newspaper, they were being described not as students at all. That was an imperialist lie. They were criminals, ruffians, and anarchists who hated China, who were you know, funded by foreign actors. And so today, if you go to some universities around the West, and if there are people who are remembering the events at Tiananmen Square, you will have some international students from China that are just appalled, because they think it's crazy to suggest that the students protest, that the people protesting in Tiananmen Square to this day were students.
Well, we'll sweep our own porch before sweeping China's. Ray, we're fast running out of time. You're going to be in Nanaimo on November 10th, talking up there. How do people get a hold of your book?
They can order it from their local bookstore, or they can go to online sellers like Amazon. There are a number of sellers like Kobo and Amazon that have the book in an ebook. And the book is also available at Amazon on audiobook.
Again, the author is Ray McGinnis. The book is Unjustified, The Freedom Convoy, The Emergencies Act, and The Inquiry That Got It Wrong. Thanks a lot, Ray, for coming on the show. Good luck with the book. I also want to thank John Helmer for being on and say, well, that's all the time I've got for this time. Until the next time, thanks again, Ray.
Thanks so much.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.